We were talking last week on the program about what might happen if the United States attacks Iran. There was, you might remember, a report on this very thing released last week in London. Now, earlier this year, President Bush said any talk of an attack is ridiculous, but he then went on to say that having said that, all options are on the table. On Friday, the Washington Post reported the US Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice is planning to spend $75 million to increase pressure on Iran over its nuclear ambitions. But is the increasing tension between Washington and Tehran really about nukes, or is there an economic war brewing here that few people have noticed? William Clark is an award-winning writer and information security analyst. He's the author of a book called Petrodollar Warfare, Oil, Iraq, and the Future of the Dollar, and he has some interesting things to say about all of this. William Clark joins me now. Welcome to the program.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Is there an economic war going on here?
Yes, I think there is. In fact, last month, the president of Iran said something interesting in a speech. He said, today, everyone, there's an economic war underway. Today, everyone sees the political war, but the economic war goes on undetected, end quote. What the Iranians are proposing to do next month is open up an oil exchange to sell oil priced in the euro currency, the currency of the European Union, and that is a threat to the supremacy of the dollar as the world's reserve currency.
Give us some background here. Until now, oil has been traded in U.S. dollars, yeah?
Well, yes, except for Saddam Hussein. He made the switch to euros in November of 2000 and did that for about 2 years and few months till he's overthrown, and Iraq was reconverted back to the dollars for oil transactions. But historically, yes, over the last 100 years, oil has been traded in the dollars primarily. But there were a couple of periods in the 1970s when OPEC was evaluating selling oil in a basket of currencies, multiple currencies, because of the devaluation of the dollar. And the United States blocked that, and now there is momentum within both OPEC and as well as Russia to sell oil in the euro because it has higher valuation relative to the dollar, the more stable currency, and the United States is trying to block that from happening.
And the United States' interest here is what precisely? I mean, presumably the fact that oil is traded in the dollar gives the United States a big economic advantage, does it?
Yes, there's three or four things. Number one, it eliminates what they call currency risk for our energy. As an American, it doesn't really matter whether the dollar becomes highly devalued or highly appreciated relative to other currencies around the world. It doesn't show up in the price of petrol here because the oil is priced in the dollar. Secondly, it drives demand for dollar, or what you call the liquidity value. All nation states that have to import oil have to accumulate dollars in their central bank reserves to make those purchases from OPEC. And thirdly, because oil is the most critical commodity traded in the global financial markets, that the currency in which it's transacted in is by default the world reserve currency. So the dollar is the world reserve currency, but if the euro becomes a, quote, petro-euro based on what Iran is planning to do, then the euro currency becomes a de facto second world reserve currency, and it guarantees access to oil. Because right now, the dollar's storage of wealth is unique. It guarantees any country that wants to buy oil, if they have dollars, they can buy it. They can't buy it in their local currency. And so
so any country that uses oil, and let's face it, we all do, needs to trade with the United States, do they, in order to accumulate the dollars?
Yes, they either need to trade or they need to buy our currencies. Yes, that's why the United States is the sort of the consumer. I don't have any oil, but I need to buy oil from, you know, the Middle East and whatnot, and I need dollars for those transactions because I can't do it in the yen or the Japanese currency.
So in a way, that explains how it is that the United States can sustain these impossible trade deficits without going bust.
Absolutely, that's exactly correct.
Because
as long as there's demand for oil, there's demand for dollars.
Now, how did the United States ever get its currency in such a prime position?
Well, that is a very long lecture. I'll just give you a short story. And most people don't quite understand it, but the age of oil basically started in Texas 100 years ago. And so because the oil business pretty much started in the United States, oil was typically traded in in the dollars. Now, the oil, after World War II, the dollar was backed in Bretton Woods by gold. There was foreign nations could exchange $35 for 1 ounce of gold for the U.S. Treasury. And that worked from 1945 to 1971, at which point the Nixon administration broke the dollar-gold link, and the dollar became a floating currency against all other currencies, and other countries could no longer get exchange their dollar bills for gold. And that was basically because of the debts of the Vietnam War. Now, at this point in the early 1970s, the dollar became very, very devalued. There was a lot of inflation in the United States, and OPEC began to consider an option of selling oil in 12 different currencies, not only the U.S. dollar, but the Canadian dollar, the Japanese yen, the German mark, the French franc. It was 12 currencies. It was basically the G10 nations plus Switzerland and Austria.
So this is the so-called basket of currencies, yeah?
Yes, the basket of currencies. But the Kissinger and the Treasury Department, the President, the Secretary of the Treasury Department, flew over to Saudi Arabia in 1973 and 74, did all these negotiations basically in secret with Saudi Arabia and saying, don't let OPEC do this. We want the oil to continue to sell in dollars. So OPEC went along with it. It was a secret deal sort of established in 1974. And then OPEC told, Saudi Arabia told the rest of the OPEC members that this is what was going on. So the rest of OPEC, because Saudi Arabia is the biggest producer, they followed that lead. And in 1975, all of OPEC agreed to sell oil in the dollars, price oil only in the dollars. But again, in 1977-78, there was a movement again to sell oil, and this time in three currencies, the yen, Japanese yen, the German mark, and the U.S. dollar. Again, the United States intervened. The new Secretary of the Treasury, Blumenthal, flew to Saudi Arabia. He met with the Saudi Monetary Authority, and they convinced them again to make sure that oil is only priced in the dollar, and so they basically were able to do this again, and this worked for about 25 years up until Saddam made the switch in November of 2000 to the euro currency, and he sort of was challenging the United States. So now,
hang on, just pause there for a moment.
Sure.
Did anyone ever find out what Saudi Arabia presumably got something in return for this favor?
Oh yes, it's a bit of a quid pro quo. They actually in 1974 they bought $2.5 billion United States Treasuries. Secretly, this was kept secret from the CIA. It was kept secret from the U.S. Congress until after the fact. And in exchange for doing this deal, we basically told the Saudi Arabians we would keep them in power. We would give them all the military equipment they could need. It was sort of a quid pro quo. We were going to make them wealthy, and we would keep them in power, but they had to make sure that OPEC didn't do this whole basket of currencies thing. So when this thing was established in 1974, 70% of all Saudi Arabia's entire wealth ended up showing up in the New York Federal Reserve, a bank account in New York, a Federal Reserve. And basically, we have been protecting them, the royal family, even though there's a lot of people who aren't so crazy about the Saudi royal family, because of this system. So and Saudi Arabia, by the way, is the largest buyer of United States weaponry. From 1950 to the year 2000, a 50-year period, they bought 25% of our armaments. Sales. Even after September the 11th, when all those Saudi hijackers attacked us, in 2002, Saudi Arabia was still the number one buyer of military equipment. It's kind of an interesting story, but the United States fought tooth and nail in the 1970s to prevent oil from being sold in a basket of currencies. But now the European Union wants oil to be priced and sold in the euro, and they have a formal policy. They asked Russia to do this. They've asked OPEC to consider this. In 2001, they wrote a policy that says, we want OPEC and non-OPEC oil producers to be an interesting story. But the United States fought tooth and nail in the 1970s to prevent oil from being sold in a basket of currencies. But now the European Union wants oil to be priced and sold in the euro. They have a formal policy. They asked Russia to do this. They've asked OPEC to consider this. In 2001, they wrote a policy that says, we want OPEC and non-OPEC oil producers to prepare the way for oil pricing and oil transactions in the euro. Now, the United States is very determined, the Bush administration, this never happened.
Now, you mentioned Saddam Hussein a little earlier. Let's talk about him. In 2000, Saddam Hussein announced he was going to trade oil in euros.
That's correct.
That was a declaration of war of sorts, wasn't it?
Some people consider that. The interesting thing is, that was the lowest point of the the euro's valuation. It was 82 cents to the dollar. So when he made this announcement, people scratched their head and said, well, he's going to lose $400 million over the next year because the euro is not worth as much as the dollar. But what happened is, after he made the switch, the euro began to appreciate, and the UN Oil for Food Program had $10 billion in it when he made switch. By the time the war started, in February of 2003, it was actually reported in the UK Guardian, the Oil for Food Program had gone from $10 billion to 26 billion euros. He'd almost tripled the profits of his country by switching to the currency. Now, when the Bush administration overthrew Saddam, the very first thing they did in May of 2003 was reconvert Iraq's oil transactions from the euro back to the dollar, even though economically the euro is worth 17% more than the dollar.
So basically, at that point, the decision by the Bush administration to go back to the dollar cost the Iraqi government. The Iraqi people a whole lot of money.
Billions.
This all got very little coverage in the mainstream media at the time.
No coverage. Almost no coverage.
You giggle like a girl at that prospect, William. Why do you think that's funny that it got no coverage?
Well, you're in New Zealand. I'm in the United States. When I wrote my essay, I had my first call was from Brisbane, Australia, before the war. I had Australia call me. I had Johannesburg, South Africa do an interview with me on the radio. I had Brazil. So I had these people from around the world calling me, and yet in the United States, hardly anyone would talk about this. I mean, I had a few small independent media outlets who did talk to me about it, but it seems like the rest of the world knows about this, but it's sort of a secret here in the United States, and even Canada. I had Canadian people interview me. It's interesting, this whole issue. It's like, the media in the United States, there's only five corporations that control 90% of what we see, read, and hear in the United States. And this is all in my book, and I talk about this, but it's a very taboo subject.
Do you think that Saddam Hussein's determination to trade oil in euros rather than US dollars was a factor in the Bush administration's determination to have regime change in Iraq?
Yes. I think the neoconservatives are being driven by two issues. Number one, they've had their sights on Iraq for a long time. It has to do with a phenomenon called global peak oil, which is a whole other subject, very controversial, which I've been studying very intently. So I think Dick Cheney knows very much that the world global oil production will be reaching a peak in the near term. And Saddam or Iraq had the last cheap reserves, and Saddam during the late 1990s, from 97 to 1999, had signed all these contracts with the Chinese, with the French, and with the Russians, and 27 other countries to develop the oil. But the United States was locked out, so was British Petroleum. So if Iraq is sitting on supposedly the second largest world reserves, but you know United States companies can go in there, yet the Chinese and the French and the Russians are lined up, as soon as the sanctions were dropped, which they should have been, because everyone knew it was disarmed, then all the Iraqi oil infrastructure could be reinvigorated by foreign oil companies, but not the United States. So it had to be regime change to, you know, get the United States in there to get some of that oil. But also, I think the final thing, when Saddam went to the euro, that was it. It was like they already had their eye on Iraq. They had it on in the late 90s when he signed all these two-thirds of Iraq's oil over to the French and the Russians and Chinese. But when he made the switch to the euro, he was threatening the dollar as the world's reserve currency. Even though it really depends on the other OPEC members, but it was a challenge to the dollar as the world's reserve currency, and no other OPEC members dared do that, even though they talked about it in the 1970s. It wasn't until September of 2000 Saddam said he was going to do this, and then it happened in November. So that was a challenge to the dollar. This is what the Europeans were like, well, good, our currency should be able to buy oil, but the Bush administration said, no, this is not going to happen. We have to get rid of Saddam. And that's why, you know, The former Treasury Secretary John O'Neill, in his very first meeting in January of 2001, Bush had just been in office 10 days, and the number one item on the national security meeting was getting rid of Saddam. This was 8 months before September 11th. So they came into the office wanting to get rid of Saddam, because Saddam actually made a switch to the euro the day before the United States elections. Our elections were on November the 7th of 2000. The switch took place, I believe, on November 6, 2000. So this whole period, even before they came to the into power, they knew that this was taking place.
Well, Lynn, what about Iran? Because it intends to do this too on, what, March 20, something like that?
Right, March 21st. Yes, Iran actually made the switch to euros for oil payments in the middle of 2003, in the middle of the war. They import a lot of oil to Italy and whatnot, and Italy and these countries pay Iran in euros. However, and also the Asian countries are paying Iran in euros, but the oil transactions are still priced in the dollar, because right now most of the oil that's traded in the world is traded through the New York Mercantile Exchange or the London IPE, which stands for the International Petroleum Exchange. And those are both dollar-denominated. You've got the Brent crude, which is a dollar-denominated, you know, for London, and you've got the WTI, West Texas Intermediate crude, which is down in with the New York Mercantile Exchange sales, and there's also a Dubai oil exchange. But what the Iranians are planning on doing is not only having oil payments in the euros, they're going to do oil pricing, and that is that's sort of a complicated macroeconomic issue. But basically, what that means is, if this thing is somewhat successful, central banks, you know, in a few months are going to have to make a decision whether they want to hold. Let's say I need to buy 1 million barrels of oil next month. Do I want? And let's say the price of oil is $70. Do I want to hold $70 million, or do I want to hold 55 million euros, because the euro is worth about 20% more than the dollar? So there's going to be what they call currency hedging, and the euro will become a de facto world reserve currency if it is the pricing or the unit of account for oil. And that's what Tehran is trying to do.
So is that more of a threat potentially to the United States than Iran's nuclear ambitions?
I think so. The Soviet Union, or the former Soviet Union, had 7,000 nuclear weapons. There's a concept that we used to talk about. It was called MAD. It was called Mutually Assured Destruction. So Iran doesn't want to commit national suicide. They're not going to launch a nuclear attack against Israel, because Israel has a couple hundred nuclear weapons, and they're not going to attack us, because it would be suicide for them. You know, it's I still believe that, you know, that the concept of MAD exists. And so it's really because the United States is so in debt. Iran is, they're not threatening us. You know, they're just trying to get out from under the dollar. And there's been sanctions against Iran ever since 1979 with the Iranian Revolution. So they can't even use dollars in their country. It's not even legal. U.S. companies cannot do business in Iran. So for them to go to the euro, from a purely economic perspective, it just makes sense economically and monetarily. It doesn't make sense for them to do this in the dollar, because you can't use dollars in Iran, and there's these sanctions against Iran from the United States. So what they're doing from an objective perspective makes sense. But what it's doing is it is challenging the U.S. dollar as the petrodollar with a petro-euro.
If you're talking about sense, it also makes sense, doesn't it, for some other countries, and I'm thinking of Russia here, which is the second biggest exporter of oil.
Right.
It makes sense for Russia to trade in the euro, because it's part of Europe and most of its trade is in Europe. Is it also talking about changing?
That is the big question. Vladimir Putin, the president of Russia, made a few statements in October of 2003. Someone asked him, you know, are you going to switch to the euro for your oil trades? And he said, we don't rule that out. That would be interesting for our European partners. You're right. 80% of Russia's oil is sold to the European Union. The European Union wants to have that oil priced in the euro, because it eliminates their currency risk, and they don't have to hold as many depreciating dollars in their banks. So people say to me, well, Iran is only, you know, exporting 2.5 million barrels, 2.5 million barrels a day. It's not that much oil. But what they don't understand is that Iran is opening up this exchange, saying anybody, you know, whether you be Kuwait or Saudi Arabia or Russia or whoever you are, if you're selling and buying oil, you're welcome to use our oil exchange. So to me, the big thing to watch in 2006 is, what does Russia do? Do they make a switch to the petro-euro? And, you know, there's been statements, and the Russians have said, you know, well, if we do that, this, you know, there's going to be great opposition from that from the United States. In my book, I say that is a colossal understatement, because Russia is, you know, 9.5 million barrels of oil. It's second behind Saudi Arabia in oil production. But from a purely, again, from a purely economic perspective, if 80% of their oil gets sold to the European Union, then selling it and pricing it in the euro and using the Iranian oil board or oil stock exchange market makes perfect sense. But because the United States is so in debt and we use the dollar flows of the petrodollar flows to finance our trade and budget deficits, it's going to cause a macroeconomic problem from our country because we can't continue supporting the twin deficits.
So in the medium term, short to medium term, President Putin may decide to stick with the US dollar because he doesn't want to provoke George Bush. But I guess, I mean, Putin has taken quite an independent foreign policy line. We've seen that in recent days with his attitude to Hamas and their election in the Palestinian authorities. But equally, in the war with Iraq, Russia was never in favour of that. Now, if the Americans do strike Iran, and that's hypothetical at this stage, but if they did, it's possible then, isn't it, that Russia could respond by switching to the euro at that point, and then cite they'd been provoked in a way.
Yes, I'm, that is what I call in my book the rogue nation hypothesis. There is a real danger here regarding Iran. If the United States strikes unilaterally, militarily against Iran, then because China, I think Iran is the second largest oil importer into China. They're getting 14% of their oil there. And so you've got Russia and China interested in Iran's oil, and they have these contracts. So if we do something stupid, then you're right. Russia could say, well, I guess we'll go ahead and switch over to the petro-euro, and that will cause some problems here. So what everyone wants to do is to do things very gradually. I mean, it needs to be, if they move to the petro-euro, that's fine, but it needs to be done incrementally over several years. But there's a real risk if Putin gets upset, if the Chinese get upset with the United States' actions in the Persian Gulf, that they have the ability to strike back economically.
You say the best plan is that if everyone moves slowly, but there is a pressure against moving slowly, and you mentioned that a little earlier in this conversation, and that is global peak oil. If the Americans really have bought this idea that in the short term we're going to reach this peak oil moment, for a country so addicted to oil, as the President said in the State of the Union address, they don't have a lot of time left, do they?
Well, this is a complicated question. Yes, the whole world is addicted to oil, but we, of course, as Americans, are probably the most addicted. We use most of it, or more than anyone else. But the problem with warfare is it's very unpredictable. I mean, Iraq, for example, last month, January, the oil exports were, I think, 1.1 million barrels. I mean, it hasn't been that low since, I don't know when, since 1990. And military activity in the Persian Gulf, and in Iran in particular, has the potential to shut off 25% of the world's oil supply, because 25% of the oil gets shipped through the Strait of Hormuz, which is near, which borders Iran. So if peak oil is imminent, which I think it is, what we need to have is a multilateral United States government and a multilateral world body sitting around saying, okay, we've got a real crisis here, we need to work together. We need to use Apollo-type energy programs as fast as possible. We need to work on this currency issue. So in my book, in the last two chapters, I go all these different policy suggestions.
Yeah, but I mean, your administration, the current American administration doesn't like multilateral moves.
And no, that's why I wrote the book. I warned the American people that we face a currency crisis and an energy crisis, and we have to work with the international community together to get through this transition, because if we don't, going to be a lot of hardship and a very hard time.
Do you think the Bush administration will strike Iran?
I hope not. I just don't know. There are a lot of leaks from people in the Air Force and from the CIA who are very worried, because they've been asked to do the war games of an aerial attack on Iran against suspected nuclear facilities. And these people in the United States military and in the CIA are very nervous, because they are saying this is going to be awful if we're ordered to do this. We don't want to do this. So they're leaking these things to the media. So I hope that the Bush administration understands that the tactical risk, the strategic risk, the economic risk, the political risk is so great that they will not do this. But I go back and forth. Sometimes I think, okay, they're not going to do it, but then I read, you know, another leak from someone in the Air Force saying, you know, we're looking at tactical nuclear weapons deployment in our, against Iran potentially, and it scares me, and it scares these people who are making the leak. So I really don't know the answer. I hope that we don't, because if they do attack Iran, that to me will usher in a period of just unprecedented global turmoil. We have not seen that kind of stuff since 1940s. That's what we'd be looking at, in my opinion.
Well, you've given us plenty of things to chew over. You know, worried us silly for the morning. It's been very nice having you on the program, though. William Clark. I've been talking to William Clark. He's an award-winning writer and security analyst in the United States. His book is called Petrodollar Warfare, Oil, Iraq, and the Future of the Dollar, 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 Dollar.